morning, I'm I want to talk about hindrances. For some reason, that's what came to my mind, and so I'm going to talk about the stereotype in traditional Buddhism, which is called five hindrances. As most of you know the five hindrances, you may not remember them, but somewhere you know them. These are traditionally five hindrances which are a block or a binder which to either meditation or to practice. There are many more hindrances, but we five represents all of them, even though they may or may not be included in the five. So sometimes we can think of them either as hindrances or as opportunities. You know, our difficulties that we have in our life, if they are included as a practice, it's not the same as if they're not included as practice. If we see something outside of our practice, then we have a problem that's different than the problem within our practice. Anyway, these are the five so-called hindrances: sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and remorse, skeptical doubt, which can also be scruples. Scruples is an interesting word. We talk about being scrupulous, meaning perfectionistic, and it does have that quality, but scruples means being attached to some kind of rule that you think is necessary, even though it's a hindrance. So, these five are natural to us. The problem that makes what makes these problematic is that they're actually natural to us. Every one of these. Without sensual desire, you would not be here. None of us would be here. So, what's the problem with sensual desire? So this comes up for people all the time, you know. It comes up for every one of us at various times in our life. But sensual desire is what keeps the wheel turning, basically. There are three categories which are the bearings of the wheel of samsara. They're at the center of the hub. They're like the ball bearings that keep the wheel going smoothly. Greed, which is associated with sensual desire, ill will, and delusion. So, greed, sensual desire is associated with greed. So, desire is like fire. So, when a fire is out of control, it burns everything up. So we have to be very careful about this particular aspect of our existence. So it's not that there's something wrong with sexual desire. It's simply that we become addicted. You know, my feeling is that when as a very young person, we become addicted to that pleasure, it influences us for the rest of our life, and it's very hard to control. So, but it's also because this is such a vital aspect of our life. Some people, you know, have no particular problem, but because it's such a vital aspect of our life, this fire, we have to learn how to keep the flame down so that it actually works for us instead of against us. So that's called practice. How do we practice with this aspect of our life, which is so powerful, and it influences us in all our relationships? So the problem is that something so powerful takes hold of us and it becomes a binder. So pleasures, you know, become binders. This is the problem with pleasure. And in the Buddha Dharma, not to be attached to pleasures is a very important aspect. Not that pleasure is bad or wrong. Practice should be joyful. It's our attachments that bind us that is the problem. So all of these aspects are natural, but that each one of them has to be afford us our freedom rather than bind us. So ill will, anger, always comes up. If you don't experience anger at least once a day, raise your hand. Yes. So how to not be controlled by anger, because anger also becomes an addiction. Anger is a very powerful addiction, and has the same power as sexual heat. So one of our precepts, you know, don't harbor ill will. Harboring is the problem. So how do we deal with ill will when it comes up? Because it comes up all the time, even though we're not necessarily conscious of it, in our subconscious mind, it's brewing all the time. So people have different dispositions. There's the greed type, there's the anger type, and there's the delusional type. And in the sutra, there's a description of the three types. You know, the greed type is very in food. The greed type is very delicate, you know, and wants to make sure everything is just right, and very scrupulous about the food they eat. The anger type only eats certain powerful foods, maybe. The delusional type takes all their food and mixes it all together, stirs it all up. It's kind of non-discriminating, but not in a good way. So, intelligent people that are cerebrally conditioning, tend to be anger types and very hard to control. So anger type needs a little more to be controlled by compassion. So, ill will is endemic to our nature. So, how can we be, how can we control, not control, you know, by force, but how do we remain free from being caught by our anger? I remember Suzuki Roshi used to say, I get angry, most Zen masters get angry, anger comes up, but I use the anger rather than being used by it. Problem is that we are all used by anger. We let it control us. It really controls us and takes up all this space in our mind. So the problem here is, how do we free our mind so that we have space for actual freedom? We talk about freedom a lot, you know, free country, I want my freedom, freedom or death. But do we want freedom? We talk about it a lot, but actually, is it really what we want? I don't think so. You know why? Because freedom is boring. When you sit in Zazen, you have perfect freedom. And it's called boredom. There's nothing you have to do. There's nothing controlling you. But it's boring. It's only boring because we want something. We want something interesting. The mind is always wanting something interesting. And so all of these, you know, sexual desire, ill will, anger is a great, you know, interesting thing because it gives us a lot of power. It's an outlet for our power. If you can't find the outlet for your power in indiscriminate, in loving kindness, you find it in anger. Just depends on which channel you want to use. So, this is allowing anger to become a vehicle for anger. Each one of us is actually a vehicle. We are like a radio station. The waves come in, get digested, and then something is transmitted. So we're like transmitters. We're transmitters of all kinds of waves. We make waves. And those waves can either nurture or destroy both ourselves and others. If we realize that we are transmitters and that we don't need so much for ourselves, then we have some freedom, actually. The great freedom is to be able to receive and to transmit Buddha's Dharma. And the hindrances keep us kind of squeezed in. Take up all that space that can be used for transmitting Buddha's Dharma. So sloth and torpor, you know, is called laziness, you know. And we go, sloth and torpor, you know, bad. But there's a reason for sloth and torpor. Laziness. Why can't I get up? You know, why can't I do this? Oh my God, I have to do that again. You know, I'd rather, you know, just sit around. But motivation is missing. So how do we allow, not create motivation, but what motivates us? If we don't have motivation, we tend to fall into bad habits. You know, the dope world caters to our lack of interest. Lack of interest is like, well, what do I do? I always knew what I was going to do. I didn't always know I was going to do what I'm doing. I can tell you that. But I always knew I had something that I wanted to do. And when I see the kids today, I say, what do you want to do? What do you want to be when you grow up? Oh, I don't know. I don't know. And that I don't know is like there's something missing. There's some motivating force that's missing. When we have a motivating force, then we don't fall into sloth and torpor because we have something that leads us. We have to be led by something. There has to be a vision of something. So I feel sorry for people that have, and we all fall into sloth and torpor from time to time. You know, we all have an impasse. That's natural for us. But something keeps us moving. You know, in our monastic practice, the schedule keeps us moving. It doesn't matter how we're feeling. We maybe feel slothful, whatever. The schedule keeps us moving, and then we find our path, and we find our, we can find our motivation when it's missing. This is the value, great value of practice. When we have a practice that is continuous, then even though we may feel an impasse or a sloth or a torpor, the movement of the cycle of practice keeps us going until we find our feet again. So this is the importance of practice. This is Dokkan, the circle of the way. Circle of the way is like continuous practice. And the continuous practice keeps us going, whether we have, no matter what kind of problem we have, it can be dealt with in practice. That's the value of practice. Within the practice, everything happens. But then when you have confidence that that's so, then it continues to motivate your continuous practice. So, I've seen that happen over and over again. The opposite of sloth and torpor is restlessness and remorse. You just cannot stop moving. Actually, nothing stops moving. Everything is continuously moving. Just sit someplace and watch everything moving. It just does. So this is our nature, is movement. But at the same time, to be able to settle within the movement, so that you're not driven by the movement. People are driven by the movement. And our society is more and more driven. In our technical society, the more conveniences we have, the more we're driven. Right? The simpler our life is, the less it's driven. The more complex our life is, the more it's driven, because that which we hold on to also has us. This piece of paper has me. I say, oh, I got this piece of paper in my hand, but this piece of paper is telling me what to do with my hand. I do that. But then it falls down. It's tells me what to do. Everything that we confront tells us what to do. It's teaching us something and including us. So the more we take on, the more we're driven by that which we think we have, but which actually is, has us. So, restlessness, how can we ever settle? Well, of course, our practice, we have zazen. Last night we were studying Gute's one finger, Zen. Every time someone asks Gute a question, he would go, he didn't have to say anything. Everything was included in this one act. The whole universe is included in this one gesture. Restlessness and remorse. You know, remorse is a really makes us restless because we don't know what to do with it. What do I do? I did this terrible thing, and now I'm condemned to eat grass, right? On my hands and knees. But it's something called forgiveness, and it's something called making amends. So, we can actually restate ourselves by forgiveness. Forgiveness is the most important thing because life can be redeemed and we can come back to zero. We can come back to being settled. But until we actually have the practice of forgiveness for ourselves and others, we can't settle down. So it's really important. People come to me with, with restless problems, and I always encourage people to forgive others and to forgive yourself. And there are little ceremonies that you can do that will help you do that. And I highly recommend it because you can always come back. That's how you come back. Redemption is possible. So remorse, is not incurable, but it binds us. So these are all binders that keep us. Unless we are in control, unless we can give ourselves up, we remain captured by our own emotions and our mind. So the fifth one is called skeptical doubt. Doubt is important. Without doubt, you don't have a way to check yourself. So am I doing this? Is this right? Is this good? Should I do that? Doubt is important. But skepticism is different. Skeptical doubt means you're standing outside and pointing. So a skeptic, needs to have proof. That's good. We should have proof. Buddha says, Shakyamuni says, don't take my word for it. When you, you should study the Dharma and find your own way. You should have proof. It should be proven to you that this is the right way. Some people study Buddhism and they're always skeptical. They want to do it, but they can't. I want to, but I can't because I'm skeptical. Even a lot of people who practice. But you should practice with your doubt. Yes. You shouldn't let the doubt be an obstacle. When you let the doubt be an obstacle, that's skepticism. So just bring your doubt right into the practice. Otherwise you can't practice. Because faith is the opposite. Faith is what gives you the buoyancy and the confidence to practice. But doubt is helpful because it balances faith. So, a healthy doubt is important. And in koan practice, sometimes they talk about the great doubt. But that's a little different kind of doubt. That's not taking anything for granted. That kind of doubt is important. Not taking anything at face value or for granted. But I like to think of it as like an airplane. You know, the engine and the wings are faith, and it keeps everything going forward. And doubt is the tail, and it controls the direction. And says, oh, a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right. No, go for that one. So both are necessary. So scruples is an aspect of skepticism or of doubt. And it's like, I'm bound by these ideas I have. That's scruple. They're very strong ideas. And because I'm bound by those ideas, I can't go forward. And many people like that. And sometimes we all have scruples like that. They're kind of, maybe you'd call it what is it in the church? It's called
confession.
It's an ideology.
Dogma.
Dogma. Yeah. Dogma is like scruples. When it's perverse. So, I've added some to this, to these five. But first I want to say that the hindrances are like a shift of focus. What the biggest problem is that they shift our focus from freedom to binding. Freedom means not being bound by anything. But it doesn't mean that there are no rules. Freedom is, we only have our freedom when we have rules. We tend to think that freedom is to do what you want to do, whatever you want to do it. And that's kind of scary for people. So we all have rules, which keeps humanity in from destroying itself. And as you see, we're, because people go beyond the rules, we're destroying ourselves. So, whoops, that's a problem. That's a problem destroying yourself. You let it happen. So, blame. You made me do it. It's your fault. Fault finding and blame. It's really a big one, a big binder, because it doesn't allow us to take responsibility for how things happen. You think it's your fault or their fault or they're wrong, which is not untrue. But that's not the essence. The essence is, what about me? What about my response, my reactions and my response? So this is the basis of conflict. It's your fault. So the sixth patriarch, sixth ancestor, has this wonderful poem in Platform Sutra where he says, fault finding is the basis of delusion. But that's the hardest thing, one of the hardest things to control is fault finding, because it's always somebody else's fault. So, yes, it is. But my response is what's important, not what comes from the outside. There's always stuff coming from the so-called outside. And it's my responsibility to deal with that in a way that's not delusional. I once wrote this thing that came to me, and I'll read it here. It says, it's like we went to a party and each one of us was handed a present, all wrapped up, we don't know what it is. And when we opened it, we read the instructions. And each one of us had to figure out a puzzle that was inside. So that's called a life. We're handed this package. We don't know what it's going to be when we open it up. And it said, you are in this place with these people under these conditions. And what are you going to do about it? You have to put all the, you have to fit your piece with all the other pieces in this party. How do you fit, how do you make your piece fit with all the other pieces in this party to make the puzzle into something satisfying, completely satisfying. But unsatisfactory things are part of the puzzle. So how do you not allow, how do you keep yourself from being a victim? That's the game. How do you keep yourself from being a victim? You did it to me. You said this. You did it. I'm a victim of you.
Why should I be a victim of you?
So it's not taking responsibility for yourself. So our wisdom is built on dealing with all this stuff and how to be free within it. How to find our freedom within all the stuff that we think is out there. So then we have attachment to excuses. I'm sorry, I was late today. And then tomorrow, oh, I'm sorry, I was late today. And then the next day, oh, I'm sorry. We get, there's an attachment to doing something over and over again and being excused. I said, well, if I say excuse me, that means I'm excused. So I can just keep doing it. Dogen has this emo, which is means just this, just this. And in that fascicle, he says, when you fall to the ground, you use the ground to help you back up. When you fall to the ground, you stumble over something and you fall to the ground, and you put your hand on the ground to help you to stand up. Instead of kicking the ground and blaming it for making you fall, you use it to help you stand up. That's called using and not being used. But if you keep falling to the ground and saying it's okay, then that's just making excuses. Then there's attachment to serenity and tranquility. But isn't that what we want? No. Yes. No. Yes. When we sit zazen, we think, well, now I should have peace of mind. But what you have is a piece of your mind. You know, Suzuki Roshi said, if you think that when you sit zazen, that you will have tranquility, serenity, then you have a problem, because everything else becomes your problem. Everything else is hindering you from having serenity and tranquility. So you can't stand having anything. You complain about all the stuff that comes into your mind. When you stop complaining and just accept everything as it is, which is emo, then you have tranquility and serenity. You just have to stop complaining. So complaining is a big problem. Complaining is necessary. You know, baby, as soon as he comes out of the womb, he goes, wah! Big complaint. It's not really a complaint, but he does complain. She does complain. And continues complaining all of her life. But to actually have a peaceful mind is no complaint. Everything, you know, there's a story of Master Rinzai. He said, I control the world. And somebody said, well, what do you mean you control the world? He says, everything is just exactly the way I want it to be. But we think, well, that's an exaggeration. But actually, if you think about it, it's not. It's just that it's so far from our complaint mind. I can't think it's possible. In zazen, there's nothing to complain about at all. If you realize there's nothing to complain about at all in zazen, you will have a peaceful mind. That's the secret of zazen. And zazen is nothing but the truth of our life. So anyway, these are some of those things, hindrances. But hindrances are also opportunities. If we realize that hindrances are opportunities, then it's called practice. And then when we realize that, then practice becomes very joyful. The most enjoyable way to live. Instead of dividing the world into good and bad and right and wrong, which is always a big problem, we bring it together. This is good and this is bad. And that's the end of my story.